Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again. Susie's back in my office, which is lovely. It's such a pleasure for me to have you here, you know, and have these conversations and the stuff we do before. And I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Oh, it's fun.
It is. Well, the year has well and truly turned now. I think it turned a little bit earlier than I'm used to. And I've always valued my mother saying to me every August, has the year turned? Has the year turned? She wanted me to note the scent changes very slightly.
Oh, so does.
The robin's song changes. And there's just this knowing, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it was, I thought I felt it at the very end of July this year.
I did. I absolutely thought it was right there with Lunasa. Just
that's reassuring. So earlier.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So early. And yet, you know, I spoke to my mother, who says it every year, I think. Well, you know, darling, August used to be, as soon as Lunasa comes, that is autumn.
Yeah.
And, you know, harvest and all that, that happens in autumn, not summer.
Yes.
And, yeah, fair enough.
The time of flowering is over.
No, I haven't finished with summer yet.
No. No, and also summer holidays. All this stuff that we sort of impose on ourselves in a kind of way, because it's called the summer holiday. We think it's the summer, but no, it isn't. The year has
turned. Oh, you mean the school holiday?
Yes. Yes, all this stuff that we take as a perennial truth, as we were talking about last time, which isn't. It's a local truth, but it's become set in stone, as it were.
Well, and also, actually, the holiday is when the holiday is for the harvest, so that all the kids were free to help with the harvest.
Oh, yes. It was enlightened self-interest, for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. So here we are. Year has turned. Nights are drawing in. We've talked about the great sadness of that. And I'm still... I've got a great joy, a very little joy, but a great joy in that the landlord and landlady who are taking this house back, I managed to gather courage in both hands and say, please, would you keep feeding the birds?
And did they say yes?
Yes.
Hooray!
In fact, she came back and said, we always intended to feed the birds. We'd misunderstood your meaning when you asked earlier, but we always have bird feeders out. And I just felt so happy because, on the one hand, birds shouldn't need to be fed, but the way the world is, birds do need to be fed.
Yeah.
And I was slowly and gently reducing the amount I was putting out each week to sort of teach the birds slowly and gently there may not be a reliable food source here, but now I can return to it.
Yay, that's great news.
It is great news. So some joy in the great sadness, yes.
Hurrah! It's funny, although I absolutely relate to the idea of there being a great sadness as the year turns, I seldom feel it. There's one of the things I absolutely love about living where I do is the four seasons, and I love them all, and in each one I'm always... I realised after many years of doing it and not really noticing myself, wherever we are, I always say, oh, it's my favourite season. I just love the fact that there's four of them and the ever-changingness of it. And actually, even though I say I haven't finished with summer yet, just I feel like I haven't spent enough time kind of outside on a picnic blanket this year, which actually for me doesn't, that doesn't mean it has to be warm. It just means it has to not be pissing down. And that's more about doing slightly too much work and not having enough play. But that I love this season. I adore it. You know, it's not quite yet, but season of mellow fruitfulness. You know, the frenzy, which it is for me. I mean, I am like a maddened squirrel at this time of year, just running about, harvesting stuff and hanging all the herbs up to dry and gathering the fruits and making crumbles and pastries and jellies and jams and pickles and, you know, you name it. I'm probably doing it, which is another reason why I haven't spent too much time on a picnic blanket, obviously. But I love it, that squirreling away for winter, when hopefully there will be more time for rest, more time to sit about and to enjoy the fruits of that particular labour, which is stores of the abundance of what's in the hedgerows and in the orchards and in the garden right
yes,
now.
Yes, I can also, I do actually also relate to that. So I think it's another language thing as well, which is always so fascinating with you. Now, you're a Scorpio sun, I'm a Scorpio moon. Scorpio moon's not a good placement, Scorpio sun's magnificent. But I don't actually find sadness wrong.
No, I don't find it wrong.
No, okay.
It's
so
just not sad.
Yes, maybe it's the wrong word then. It's the sort of, okay, we're starting, yes. Because I agree with you. I'm hoping to goodness that South Seal Flower Show is on again in the autumn. So I'm viciously competitive with my lemon curd and my jam.
Ooh, lemon curd.
I absolutely love it.
I don't make lemon curd.
Oh, I make lemon curd. It's so easy.
I know, but I don't grow lemons, so it doesn't occur to me to make it.
Oh, God, yes, there we go. Yes, of course, I'm buying lemons from Spain, aren't I? Ah, damn.
Hopefully they're organic Megan's lemons this year.
Damn well, they have to be, yes, because you've got to use the
peel.
Peel.
Moment of utter madness.
Oh yes, that I do love. Yes. So again, I'm not certain in what I say. There is a sadness, but there is also a huge joy in the fruiting. And I cannot tell you how lovely it is to just walk out last night. I was making a vegetable stir fry, picked a courgette, picked some broad beans.
Brought them back in again.
Yeah,
put them in the
young onion.
Yeah.
Threw them in the wok.
It's so satisfying, isn't it?
It actually is, yes.
So
I was talking bollocks. But okay. I do feel it. I do
feel
there
is
it as
there
well.
Is a melancholy that's very, yes. very common. As the year turns, there is a melancholy yes. around, you know, the darkness, the it's not going to be warm, it's not probably not going to be, you know, dry, happy.
But it's also not
anyway.
Living in the now, so because the now is utterly beautiful.
It is.
Oh, God, I had a silly little one last night. I have this beautiful sacred space that I go and visit occasionally, and I don't visit as often as I should, just to sit and be by the water and no dogs, because usually I take hounds out, but to go out on my own is a luxury. And I was going out last night to sit in the sunset. And yesterday was the day the elderflower champagne turned alcoholic. So we both had a glass of elderflower champagne, as we quite frequently do at supper, and afterwards I went out to the car with my keys in my hand and went,
Maybe not. Ah, okay. I must twizzle the lid. I've been twizzling the lid and it's...
Mine didn't need twizzling this year. It won't have needed it for some reason.
No, it didn't.
Last year it foamed and exploded and twizzled all over the place. And this year it's been really well behaved, but it's still utterly fizzy and delicious.
Oh, good score.
So
right. Well,
I'm very grateful, but probably slightly alcoholic now. Just enough to think, I don't think I'll be driving.
Cute.
But then, of course, I could have found a place I could walk to. I'm not entirely sure about going into meditation while squiffy.
I'm very sure that you shouldn't go into meditation while... No, you shouldn't drive while squiffy, but I can't see any reason at all why you shouldn't meditate while squiffy, particularly when we're talking one solitary glass of homemade elderflower champagne. This is not the actions of a hardened alcoholic, is it? It's just...
No, probably not. I don't know about meditation, but the subject of meditation while squiffy. I have a friend who smokes cannabis before she meditates. She's quite entitled to do so. She's in California where it's legal to do so. I'll hasten to add that. But there's a bit of me that sort of thinks that's cheating. And also, you don't have as much discernment, I don't think.
This is coming from a place of pure ignorance to a degree, as I'm not really a smoker, and I'm not much of a drinker either. I do very much like a glass of red wine, but I very seldom get drunk or even squiffy, and I'm not any sort of a smoker or an imbiber of anything really that's
of
that
alters moods.
No, but for example, the origin of cannabis is, as far as I understand it, in terms of are smoking it, it's a sacred herb. It's a way to get to the goddess. It's partnership with the divine for, you know, Rastafarians, whose sacred herb it is.
Well, there you are. So you're changing my mind already. It's wonderful. I won't do it because I'm a control freak, I think.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because you would be a little bit out of control. But it's with all things, isn't it? Everything is everything. Literally everything is potentially
good or bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and everything is sacred ultimately because it's all an emanation of and created by the divine. So
please don't think I'm against cannabis in any way. Cannabis oil was partially responsible for saving my life from cancer. Mm. It worked for me together with the other things that I'm doing, and possibly my response, because you see, we can only talk from our experience or project. When I was taking the oil, when I was ill, it brought up my demons.
Right.
Now, for most people, I think it gives you a nice time. But for me, it was very important it brought up demons. Because those demons were in there and they were part of the illness. Mm. So I would just take it before I went to bed. And if I didn't go to sleep immediately, in the pitch dark of the black, there were very, very unpleasant things coming up. So if I'm going into meditation, I don't think I want to meet them. Oh, I'm making a right prat of myself today, aren't I?
No, you're not. No, I can't really contribute to the conversation just because the spirits have made it very clear to me from a very, very, very early age is, Susie, you will not do those things.
Well, there you are. I get that instinct too, that they're not for me to do with spirituality.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a dear friend who went to the Amazon jungle, and lots of people are talking about these medicines that the shamanistic people take. And I don't have a problem with that at all, but I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And you know, on the times when I've kind of looked at what other people are doing and thought, you know, oh, well, you know, does sound, I don't know, healing or interesting or whatever, always they're like taking me by the hair and just going, don't you dare.
Mm.
Don't you dare. Mm. And I remember once when specific to... the imbibing of fly agaric, that I was literally told by the spirits, you will under no circumstances do this. We will fuck you up, basically, if you do this. And that my relationship with non-ordinary reality is such that they were telling, what they basically said, I'm hating myself for saying this out loud now, but this is what they said, was that the place many people get to when they imbibe things is the place I get to by myself.
Yes.
And that their exact words were, why would you go through the window when you already know how to use the door?
Yeah.
And that, for me, it's clear that it's not part of my path. But that doesn't mean I judge other people at all negatively for it being their path, unless they are using it in some way any of them, using plant spirit medicine as a recreation or as a way to numb their way out of their authentic relationship with the spirits. And that if you've turned it, or indeed if you're, you know, using it in such a way that the ayahuasqueros or shamanistas or whoever don't have access to their own sacred plants because it's being sold in the West, then, you know, very much kind of damn your eyes. But
it's a yes and, isn't it?
It is because a yes and.
On the one hand, anything that makes you happy will generally make you a kind of better person. If you are genuinely dissolving negativity, if you can have a little bit of leisure time, even lying on the beach or something like that, you usually come back refreshed.
Yeah.
But I think my view on it is that there have been many times in my life when I've needed to have access to what I would call Christ, and hopefully I have it pretty much all the time. Hopefully it's in me and breathes and lives in me. Mm. But at times of crisis, I don't want to have to go and find something to help me get there.
Yeah. Yeah, just to be clear as well, I'm not condemning the recreational use of cannabis as like you're a bad person. I'm talking about the real big plant spirit medicines.
And
I'm also talking about when you're using anything really as avoidance, as basically a spiritual bypassing. Yeah. Like, you know,
Yes, Gabor Mate says that the drug taking issues, because he worked probably still does work in Vancouver with people on drugs, and his book, The Realm in the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, is just gallingly painful.
Mm.
The stories of these people and the cycles that they're caught up with. And he's saying, you know, the war on drugs is just so ridiculous because the drugs are their only answer in addiction to the problems that they faced.
Yeah.
The only way out. And we have this worldwide war on drugs. Well, we wouldn't use them if we didn't need them. Well, and we wouldn't need them if we weren't so utterly fucked up as a species.
But also, the war on drugs is so, as usual, cynically, it seems to me, about money. One of the most harmful drugs there is in the world is alcohol.
Mm.
More damage is done by alcohol, as I understand it from the statistics, than by any of the other things you could imbibe.
Yeah.
And yet alcohol is entirely legal.
Yeah.
And probably consumed by, certainly in the West, to some degree, the majority.
Mm.
And yet, you know, who's ever heard of some cannabis-using token person beating the crap out of their wife? You know, this doesn't happen, does it?
The guy who killed our friend John was high on cannabis.
Really?
Yes, but it wasn't the cannabis. Right. It was the guy.
Right.
And I saw him in the court, and I was thinking, ooh, I didn't think that could happen, you know, I didn't think it was them, but sitting in the courtroom looking at him, and I was actually thinking I would like to go and sit with him in jail if he'll let me and talk to him and listen to what, you know, what was going on for him and if he wants to talk. And then he looked at me and something else looked out of his eyes. It was not the cannabis that killed John.
Right.
But I wanted to just put that in, saying that it may be that taking the cannabis was his only way for him to cope with the demon that was possessing him, and that was a demonic force in him.
Mm.
There was something other than him that was not good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen that a few times. But anyway.
Yeah, I also feel like we're on super thin ice because I know next to nothing about this, and I can't even remember where we started. Oh, with Maggie being slightly tiddly and wondering whether it's okay
to go to her sacred place.
To go to her sacred place. I think my straight answer is, of course it's okay to go to your sacred place at any time, in any state, anyhow.
Yeah. Oh, it was the driving. That was why I didn't go.
Yeah.
Okay, so you wanted to ask me something. Let's get back on course.
Yes, okay. So I, through a series of extraordinary twists in the tale, came to be talking about the sound car the other night. Specifically, it had arisen through us talking about Merkaba and the way in which the shape of the Merkaba is the very same shape that I talk about. I'm not going to probably have time to go into this because I'd have to begin from somewhere else, but is a shape that bears a very significant relationship to the two red triangles, which are also the lemniscate that are very prevalent in my work.
And the Star of David.
And the Star of David, absolutely.
Mm.
Was very, very, very intrigued to discover that what divides itself into three shapes in a Merkaba, or three spinning areas of power, was named Merkaba. Because the car sound was the beginning of a name in, if you kind of, God, this is so hard for me to talk about because I'm absolutely in that place of my words aren't coming easily today. Mm. So anyway, to get to the point, I wanted to please will you tell me about the Merkaba in general, but also, why is ka the sound for spirit?
I don't know. I know that it's supposed to mean that mer is light, ka is spirit, and ba is body, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's actually about the vessel. It means chariot.
Yes.
Or wheeled wagon, if you want to be slightly less posh about it. But Pharaoh and his men chased the Israelites to the Red Sea in Merkabahs. Uh-huh. So it's not just a spiritual word. It just literally means a chariot, which means a vessel to carry a soul.
Yeah.
And whether the soul is out chasing things to kill them or for meat or fun or whatever, or whether it's getting from one end to the other, is completely up to the soul, I think. It's just the container. But it's the container in which I think we feel safe to access spirit.
Oh, so it's not us?
The Merkabah isn't us, no.
Okay.
No, the Merkabah is... No, it isn't us. It's the vessel in which we ride. So in a way, it could be interpreted as all our development, all our karma, all our lifetimes or something would be a spiritual chariot in which we ride in this life. So okay. It's as fast or as powerful or as strong or as good as is appropriate for this life.
Okay, but doesn't part of it mean body?
Yes, body, light and spirit. So, but yes, that's interesting because ka is spirit, that's an Egyptian word really, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah, so I don't know how it pans out in the Hebrew. The word for soul in Hebrew is neshama. There's the nefesh, the animal soul, and the neshama, the more enlightened soul. So that's not etymologically
related.
But I don't know about these things. Like, for example, there's 44 mentions of Merkabah in the Bible, which is probably grammatically relevant or something.
Right.
And I don't really know about that. All I know is that for me, the Merkabah means it's the space that you are in to do the Merkabah meditation, because it's about rising up while in your body through your spirit to the light. But the whole thing is a container for that. The only time I've ever been involved in a genuine Merkabah meditation, there were a group of six of us forming the vessel for the one to rise.
Who's the one?
The one person who was chosen from that group.
Okay.
To be the one who did the
ascent. That's fascinating to me, just because for me, what the Merkabah spoke to, knowing bollock all about what you know.
Well, I know bollock all about what you know.
Sorry, I'm also aware that my language, both this time and last time, has been left a lot to be desired. I hope there's nobody out there finding it offensive rather than refreshing. Anyway, so to me, the Merkabah really, really spoke to that shape that you call the Star of David, which is, so just in case you don't know and you're listening, from my perspective, and I imagine Maggie would describe it really differently, the Star of David is made up of two triangles on top of one another. So there is an upward facing triangle, equilateral triangle, and a downward facing equilateral triangle, which are equally on top of one another, thus creating a shape which has six points to the star and a hexagram in the middle.
Yeah.
So to me, the hexagram in the middle, the hex is the symbolic representation of the womb. So you're calling it a container. To me, that representation is that thing we've called the chalice. It's the cauldron.
It's Holy Grail.
It's the Holy Grail, exactly. Yeah. It's the womb. It is the personal mini womb, if you like, and it is the universal meta womb.
Yeah.
The womb of all. So it speaks to the divine, to creation, to that which... the no thing from which thing emerged, so the divine womb of all. And that the when, if you take those two triangles and pull them apart so that they become tip to tip, you have the upward facing triangle, which is the symbolic representation of masculine energy, and the downward facing triangle, which is the symbolic representation of feminine energy. And so if you then put them back together again, the creation of the hex is the union of the active and the receptive, which then makes that generative.
Beautiful.
So to me, the Merkabah is potentially all about the creation of that magical space, which is the space where active and receptive join to become generative.
Yeah, that fits in different language, in different terminology. That fits because for me, one of the triangles would be the human reaching up to the divine, and the other one is the divine coming down to the human. And the meeting point in the middle is where, I mentioned last time, this idea of when we're born, it's our story, then we individuate to our story, our story, the family story, my story, and then we're meant to give the strength of us to the Holy One to become part of the greater story. Mm. So that would be the same kind of thing, but we have to reach up. Well, the divine is always reaching down so that we can get to this greater story. So I would define the place of meeting, the hexagon, as the soul.
Right. Nice. Yeah, I mean, those two ways of seeing it are very on the same page.
They're very complementary, aren't they? Yeah. I always call the soul the kiss between heaven and earth.
Oh, I like that.
I like that too.
So in that case, so for me, that place, that thing, that space where the upward pointing triangle and the downward pointing triangle have met and created this hex in the middle, that is the ultimate betwixt and between to me.
Mm.
So that's the place of maximum magic where, you know, in the old ways of speaking about it, where masculine and feminine have met and become one. So we're talking about a beyond gender, beyond active and receptive, inclusive of active and receptive.
Yeah.
Beyond matter and spirit, beyond all the ways in which we could be divided or polarized. Mm. And instead, these apparently opposing things have come together to the place of and. It's the ultimate of and.
Yeah.
And that therefore it is the place from which manifestation upon any plane could take place. And actually, I'm so entertained by what's just come out of my mouth, because I've just said manifestation on any plane. And as I said to it, I was brought straight back to the beauty of you saying, if you're going to be on a plane, bless the land you're traveling over while you're doing it.
Mm.
And that if you want to call to the real power of the kind of the potency of the sacred geometry, if you like, that is the metaphorical explanation of the powers of the world, both physical and metaphysical.
Mm.
That if you can call yourself into that place of betwixt and between, into this hex, in connection with your womb, which doesn't mean you have to be female, I'll speak to that in a second, and the womb of all, then the magic, the intention, the power of what you do in those prayers and blessings will be so much greater than if you're just in your head with it, as it were.
Mm.
If you're creating and calling to that magical betwixt and between state.
Which sort of brings us back to you probably need to be fully focused and conscious for that.
Yeah. Yeah, true, which is why maybe it's not a great idea to do it with a couple of
glasses. Well, it may be a brilliant idea to start with, but then I think you've got to learn to try and climb the ladder yourself.
Mm.
I mean, I think you could find out that the destination is there, but you've got to learn how to get it to yourself. Because I think that's part of the commitment we have to make to the Holy One, to the creation, that we turn up, we show up fully conscious and with the discipline to act on what we're told.
I guess it depends. Please don't let me go back to wombs. But
oh, yes.
There's a bit of me that also wonders if does it depend on our capacity to be in total and utter authenticity when we are, in inverted commas, fully conscious? Because maybe there's something to be said. The back of my mind keeps harking away to kind of bacchanalian festivities and the idea that actually to get a bit out of order, as it were, drunk and disorderly, can be in service to the gods. And I think it really, really can be if what is in the way of you fully showing up at the altar of the gods, as it were, is some kind of restraint or incapacity to really open yourself.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
And then, you know,
yeah.
Glass of bubbly, where hey.
Oh.
You've got so much more opportunity to really show up,
it's
even
a yes
though you're
and.
Slightly under the influence.
It's
yeah.
another yes and. Absolutely. There have been times when I know that I've been far more open and available after a glass of fizzy.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But there's also been times when after a glass of fizzy, I didn't have the strength and discernment to say no to a young man to whom I should have said no.
Right.
So, again, I'm only talking from experience. And I also think that, oh, this is going to sound so patronising and so entitled and so privileged.
Are you sure you want to say it then?
Yes. Maybe that's how you start out. You have to do the whatever it is to get you to the point where you are willing to do it through sheer bloody self-discipline.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I'm only suggesting that it's
a way
to get past blocks, not a way to carry on.
Oh, well, we're in total agreement. Right. Womb. Come back to the womb.
So, yes. I'm aware that I talk a lot about womic connections to the divine, et cetera, and the great womb of all and the meta womb and the
not complaining.
And blah, blah, blah. No, but it must be a bit shit if you're listening and you're a bloke and you're like, okay, so where's my access to the divine? I haven't got a womb. Well, there you are. You're wrong there because actually you do have a womb, as I understand it. Every single child, human child ever, spent their first, I think it's 6 weeks mm-hmm. in the womb being female.
Mm.
Which means that, so, and you grow testes and a penis and all the rest of it if you are going to then become
a person. And you see this with chickens body. Because quite a lot of chickens will change gender according to the needs of the flock, and they have got the ability within them
to go either
to
way.
To go either way,
yeah. But anyway, so it means even the most manly, in inverted commas, man has access to womic wisdom because he does have the tiniest little meta-womb just above his perineum.
Oh.
Which is, I think, is very beautiful.
Yes. Indeed. I didn't know that. That's lovely.
And also that, you know, let's not get hung up on wombs to a degree, I guess. It's a beautiful and convenient metaphor because it speaks to what we know of creation from our body, and certainly sitting here as a woman who's had children, I can really relate to the idea that all of creation comes from a womb. That's how my kids got here, kind of thing. But it's a metaphor, and it's not the only metaphor.
And it's the hexagon in the Merkaba, whatever your gender, whatever your sex. It's a in a way, it's the place where you stand, where heaven and earth do meet.
Yeah.
So it is a sacred place. And yes, if you're male and you don't feel like you've got a womb, dive into the Star of David, because there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Sorry. Just, I'm going, sorry, and not saying anything at all.
That's all right. We're on 32 minutes.
Are we really?
Yeah.
Oh, is it time to be quiet?
It is.
Okay.
Should we go
lovely
away and be
to
quiet?
Speak to you. Yes.
We'll lovely to speak to you.